This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Arnoš Lustig is a Holocaust survivor and a novelist. He's not nearly as well known as Elie Wiesel or Primo Levi, but many critics believe he should be. The New York Times describes his work as wholly unsentimental and without self-pity. He's written 15 novels, including Night and Day, Darkness Cast No Shadow, and A Prayer for Katerina Horowitza, which was nominated for a National Book Award. Lustig was just 16 when he entered the Nazi concentration camps, first in Theresienstadt. Later, he was transported to Auschwitz and Buchenwald. After escaping from the camps at the end of the war, he returned to his native Prague, became a member of the communist movement, and began writing novels, short stories, and screenplays set during the war. He was an influential part of the Czech New Wave cinema. He also hosted radio programs. Lustig left Czechoslovakia shortly before the Soviet invasion in 1968 and emigrated to the U.S. He teaches literature and film now at American University. His new novel is Lovely Green Eyes, about a young Jewish girl who survives the war by passing as a Gentile and working as a prostitute in a brothel for German soldiers. We begin with a reading.
This is a story of my love. It is about love almost as much as it is about killing. About one of love's many faces, killing. It is about number 232 Ost, the army brothel that stood in the agricultural estate by the River Sun before the German army retreated farther west. About 21 days, about what a girl of 15 endured. About what it means to have the choice of going on living or being killed. Between choosing to go to the gas chamber or volunteering to work in a field brothel as an Aryan girl. It is about what memory or oblivion will or will not do. I fell in love with Hanka Kaudersova's smile, with the wrinkles of a now 16 years old, with the effect her face had on me. What saves me, apart from the uncertainty of it, is time. They are fragments out of which an event is composed. There are its colors and shades, and there is horror.
Arnoš Lustig, welcome to Fresh Air.
Good morning.
I was thinking that in one sense, this novel is about young people whose lives and their love, their even their erotic imagination, is twisted by war and brutality. What did you find interesting about that side of the Holocaust story?
I tell you, erotic was sometimes the last freedom of people. It was a limited freedom, but it existed. It existed and it represented beauty of life, of man. And to omit it would be a mistake. It existed. It existed when people were not completely hungry. When you are hungry, there is no erotic, there is no sex. But when you are not starving, literally, so there is, especially among young people, erotic.
I was also thinking that Hanka, or Skinny, as this girl is known in the brothel, is thrown back on her instincts in her encounters with these German soldiers in the brothel, that it's a very elemental situation, a sexual encounter, buying sex, and she has a very elemental fear of giving herself away as a Jew. Is that part of what you struggle with in this book, what you're exploring, what people rely on when they're pressed?
I tell you, my motives was a kind of anger at the Nazis, what they did, how they twisted life of people. And what I learned is that when somebody makes you into an animal, so you adopt animal instincts. So this happened to Hanka. It's a fiction. It's a fiction based on hundreds of fragments of experience. And the deepest motive for that was what the Nazis did to innocent people. And Hanka was innocent. She was 15. She was a virgin. She had some fantasies about sex, but no idea about real sex because she had a lot of time. And suddenly she was in a situation to die or to be hired, sort of, quote unquote, into a German Brussels under the conditions that she will lie about her age, that she's not 15 but 18, and about her race, about her origins, that she's an Aryan girl. She looked Aryan, so this was a sort of advantage. But she had no idea what to expect. And it's an accusation of this Nazi system, how they despised dignity of men. It's really, it's a story about love and about dignity and about courage to exist under such circumstances, because not everybody would be able to do it.
I know that you once went to the ballet with Miloš Forman. You went to see Baryshnikov.
Yeah.
And that was part of what gave you the idea to write about young girls in war.
I tell you what happened. Forman called me and said, look, here is Misha Baryshnikov from Petrograd, and come to the hotel. He's performing here and you are invited for some brandy. So I went and saw him exercising for Nutcracker for the next day. And he invited my family for Nutcracker for the opening evening. And in the second act of Nutcracker, it's a beautiful act. It's about snowflakes, 16 years old girls are dancing. It's so moving and so beautiful. And my daughter suddenly, sitting next to me, said, Father, what happened to you? And I said, I will tell you later, because I had got a horrible idea that these beautiful girls on stage are Jewish. And if they would be Jewish, they would pack them into a railroad car and kill them. And this was only an idea, but it was scary, this idea. And I decided to write for my daughter a book. So I told her, horrible thing, Barbara, I told her, look, I am going to write about a girl like you who became a prostitute but wanted to save her soul. So tell me everything about life of 16 years old girl. So she did. I wrote the book, let her read it. And she said, but Father, there are too many juices.
You mean, she meant it was there was too much sex in it? Too much sex and the body?
And so I forgot it. I put it into a drawer and really forgot it. But 5 years later, she asked me and said, Father, what happened with that book? I said, you didn't like it because there was too much of sex. But she said, but then I was 16, 17, but now I am 22. So I let her read it again, and she said, it's fine. It's not about sex. It's about morality.
I find this so poignant to think that you talk to your daughter this way. I'm also thinking that so many survivors never spoke of their past, and especially not to their children, that they wanted to shelter them, that they didn't want to rob them of innocence or impose their experience, their pain on their children's imaginations.
I didn't. You are right. I didn't speak about it to my daughter, but this evening I had to speak to her. And then I discovered that speaking or not speaking, she had nightmares anyway.
You said you asked her about what it's like to be a 16-year-old. Did you ask her about her dreams, her fantasies, her life?
Yes,
her life?
And I told her that I'm not interested in any explicit sex, that I am interested in what it does to her. What are her feelings? That I am really not interested in any details of sex in case that she has some. And she really told me beautiful things. For instance, I used a dream where she steals a coupon for food which means that she will be taken out from a transport, because the rule was that if I survived, Barbara, like now talking to you as a survivor, someone else had to be killed. And this is this strange feeling of guilt of every survivor.
You write about a lot of women.
You know, in camps, women were treated so horribly because Nazis didn't like women. They thought that woman belongs to church, to bed, or into the kitchen. And they humiliated women. You know, I saw my mother, for instance, walking naked through the mud, and I saw she's walking in Auschwitz to the gas chamber. And there is so much dignity in women. And they have to endure so much more than men. So I came from camps with respect for women. And, you know, when you have this experience, you cannot get rid of it. So it's in me.
Can I ask you a real personal question now, not as if these weren't personal questions, but had you had any sexual experience before you were sent to the camps?
No, I was young. I had only fantasies, and we did what all boys are doing, you know. But I had no... I tell you, when I was 16, so my father... I was working with my father, and I was in love with my father. Was the best father. He never beat me, for instance. And we were working hard on the railroad. So we were getting double portions of food. And... at a certain moment, my father started to ask me if I was with a woman. And I was embarrassed because I knew everything about it, but I never was. And I said, "Father, leave me alone." But then I got angry and went to a prostitute who was a horseback rider and a beautiful girl, 20 years old. Her real name was Inge, and she was known for selling herself for margarine and sugar and whatever. So I told her if she can do it with me. And she said, if I did it with someone else. I said, no, but I really know everything about it. So she said, okay, so come this day. And she said that I will be number 11 or 13. This I don't remember, but it was over 10. So I was the last one, and she was very nice to me. But I didn't like it. I said, my God, if that's all what my father wants and people dream about. But the more time passed, the more romantic it seemed, like looking back. And so I went to her again, and we became friends. And when we left for Auschwitz, so... boys who knew that we are going to die said, so bring this girl and no one will leave as a virgin. So I brought her, and really no one left as a virgin from these boys. The youngest was 14 years old, and his name was Milan Oppenheimer. And when I survived, I visited his parents, and he died a horrible death, and I'm not going to speak about it, but it was horrible.
In the camps? In camps,
mm-hmm. They amputated his legs and threw him alive to the bottom of a railroad car. And one day, when I invited his father to radio, because he liked this canteen and we had really good things, coffee and cakes, so he started crying, and I didn't know what to do with him. So I told him, Mr. Oppenheimer, I have to tell you that before Milanek went to Auschwitz, so we invited a beautiful woman, and she made love to Milanek. So he went to Auschwitz experience. And this man started smiling mildly, crying and smiling. And I knew in that moment what it meant for my father to be with a woman. You know, it's maybe for fathers, it's initiation in life, in some adult life, and fathers don't want to cheat their children. So this was my experience, Barbara.
So it was a comfort that you were able to offer this father of your friend, that, yeah, that his son did not go to his death without,
exactly,
without experience with women.
He was happy, quote unquote.
Arnosh Lustig's new novel is Lovely Green Eyes. We'll talk more after the break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Arnosh Lustig. He is one of the leading Czech-born writers of the past century. He's a survivor of the concentration camps during World War II and the author of many books set during the war and afterwards, including his latest novel to be translated into English, Lovely Green Eyes. Arnosh, you grew up in Terezin, which is before the war, a town in Czechoslovakia and the site of Terezinstadt, the Nazi ghetto and concentration camp. As a young boy, what did you know about the mounting Nazi horror? Did you see the Nazis build the camp before your eyes?
It was built by Jews, so everybody had to see it, and we all were parts of building it, because the city was originally for 5,000 people, and Nazi packed over 60,000 there. So there was building going on all the time, and I was one of those builders, quote unquote. I was working, cleaning streets and building the railroad, which at the end took us directly to Auschwitz. And Nazis wanted, they said to our leaders, and now prove to us that you are not Luftmenschen, people of the air, that you can take care of yourself and build an exemplary ghetto. It was a fake, of course. They wanted to concentrate people from the occupied Europe and to organize their transfer to the liquidation camps like Treblinka, Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen, and so on and so on.
It was also a propaganda site. It was a model camp that the Nazis set up initially to fool a Swiss Red Cross inspection team into thinking that the Nazis were humane and building a new society, a fine new city. When you were there, were you then involved in these preparations to beautify the camp for the inspectors?
Everybody was. There was a coffee house and concerts and, you know, theater and operettas. They, Nazis, German Nazis, were really masters of fake. And they invited a corrupted Red Cross inspector who spent one afternoon in Theresienstadt and found everything very well, because they didn't show him what was not so well.
You were sentenced to death, three times, I think.
Three times, but I was sentenced definitely more times than three times. Many times I didn't know about it. Once I was in a quarantine in Auschwitz where we were waiting only to be gassed, because if you know, this is a funny sight of fate, that when they were gassing Hungarian Jews, so it was good, quote unquote, for Czech Jews.
When you were in quarantine and you were waiting to die, to be executed, what did you all do? You were with a lot of young teenagers.
First 3 days we were really scared to death, but then we were bored. So I remember that we were, with a ragball, we were playing soccer, and I was a goalie between two posts, and the electricity wire had 10,000 volts, and I knew that I cannot lose a ball because it would be end of our play. And came an SS man, very elegant, and said, "What are you doing here?" And we told him, "So we are waiting to be gassed, and in the meantime we are playing soccer." And he couldn't believe it. And I, my nature makes me remember this almost funny, bizarre episodes, because as a writing man, I'm looking for something what's not average. Because, you know, as writers, we know that average is our enemy, that things have to be worse than bad or better than good. This is the approach of every writer. And, you know, I don't believe that one writer can describe Holocaust. It has to be many writers together to create a picture. One writer is not enough. No one writer can make it, even if he would be Leo Tolstoy.
Novelist Arnoš Lustig, his new book is Lovely Green Eyes. We'll continue our conversation after the break. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Back with Czech writer Arnoš Lustig. His many novels and short stories are set during World War II. Lustig is a Holocaust survivor. After he escaped the camps, he returned to his native city, Prague, and joined the newly formed Communist Party. He became a journalist, novelist, and screenwriter. Like his contemporaries Miloš Forman and Václav Havel, he criticized the party's policies. Lustig emigrated to the U.S. in 1968 and now teaches literature at American University. He was recently featured in the film Fighter, directed by Armir Barlev, in which he returns to Prague with his friend and fellow Czech emigre Jan Wiener and retraces the journey Wiener took in his flight from the Nazis. During the filming, the two friends argued about the separate paths their lives took after the war. Wiener was accused of being a British spy by the Czech government and imprisoned in a communist labor camp. In this clip from Fighter, Lustig explains his own choices to his friend.
I tell you, it's not a joke that billion people voted communist. It must mean that the illusion was horribly strong.
No, it meant
for
that,
some.
That the government was extremely powerful and that these people thought it was for keeps and that it would be a good thing to join the winners. And that's why they stayed in the party, to have an easier life.
This is one way. This is your way. I don't agree with you completely,
Hansa. And to pursue their own ambitions.
I would ask as a question. Everybody should ask him a question. How many people did you denounce? How many people did you harm? How many people did you beat? How many people did you kill? I didn't denounce, didn't harm, didn't beat, didn't kill. I feel clean.
I have absolutely no doubt about that.
I know, but I was a communist, so I was a stupido. So you can give me, for politics, a terrible grade.
I give you, for politics, a 3-.
You know this.
You're close to many Czech intellectuals, émigrés, to Václav Havel, Josef Sereky, Miloš Forman, and I imagine you've had the same kinds of conversations and arguments even with them that you had with John Wiener, looking back over your experience in Prague after the war and your belief, your support of communism.
You know, support of communism, it was an experiment. It was a beautiful experiment which completely failed. And at 18, you are not as clever as at 76. Clever, quote unquote, you know. So, and we had, you know, the party was weak, really, from 58 till 68. The party was very liberal. And we could make films and write books as we wished. They only told us, you can do whatever you like, only don't attack two things, socialism and the Soviet Union. And I was writing about Jews, and Forman was making movies about the bizarre side of life, and so on and so on. We really had beautiful 10 years. Then it ended.
When did you begin to lose faith? And when did you become aware of surveillance, of betrayals, of...
When I found out that in my country they are concentration camps for so-called enemy of people, this was too much for me. Because I thought that communism means more tolerance, more democracy. It was an ideal which failed. And I felt sick. I really felt sick. And I criticized the party, you know. I had 5 serious warning to be expelled from the party. But because I had so-called clean hands, I didn't collaborate with the Nazis. I came from the camp. So I was a clean hand man in the party. So they never expelled me, only later when I was already in the United States. But, you know, it's very complicated. When there is a totalitarian regime, there is only one party. And if you want to exist, you have to be part of this party. But there were so many elements. They were Democrats, fascists, religious people, because there was no other party. So this party was a conglomerate of many elements.
Are you involved in the politics of the Czech Republic now?
No, I am not involved because nature of writing is different than nature of politics. You know, in politics, quoting Khrushchev, the duty of a politician is to convince people in a village where there is no river to build a bridge. And literature has different nature. Literature is looking for the most profound truth, not tainted by any lie or mistake or whatever. So being a politician is not for me.
How much time do you spend in the Czech Republic? How often do you go and who do you hang out with when you're there?
Barbara, I spend as much time as possible because I feel like a sardine in the sea. It's my home, you know. I am at home there. But at the same time, I am very happy that I can go back to America. And in America, I am looking forward to go to Prague. I cannot work in Prague, to tell you the truth, because there is too much excitement for me. And America is an ideal place for me to write, because nobody bothers me. I teach, I go home, and I write. And, you know, America is a better place to work for me, to concentrate.
So in Prague, you're too busy talking to old friends?
Yeah, it's so exciting. I get up at 5 in the morning because I'm so excited what it expects me to do during the day, but it's very bad for work. But at least then I'm longing to work.
Amidst all the research and your books and the film, there was also a whole bunch of information about your passion for soccer and pages and pages from a website devoted just to your passion for soccer. And I'm remembering that you said that soccer had a place in your past when you played in the camps. Is there a lifelong connection there?
I tell you, so everybody has some hobbies and inclinations. So I love soccer. It's one of the most elegant games invented. So I played soccer in camp where the German officers were betting on their own teams. And if somebody didn't perform well, they sent him to the East. But in the meantime, it was a lot of fun to play. And with my students, not now, unfortunately, you know, age makes me slower and slower, but in my mind I am still playing with my students soccer, and it's a good game.
So the memory has been transformed over the years.
Yeah, so now I play in my memory. So don't believe to those website stories.
Arnoš Lustig's new novel is Lovely Green Eyes. He's featured in the documentary film Fighter, which is available on video. This is Fresh Air.